Board. Okay. I will call to our other regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, 11/20/2012. I would ask the audience to join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Kelly, please note that I looked at the flag this time instead of looking up, okay? She called that to my attention in the past. Okay. Item number three on the agenda is public comment. This is an opportunity where members of the audience may address the board on a topic on today's agenda. Is there anyone that would like to address us on a topic today? Okay, seeing no one, I will move on down to consideration of minutes. We have added, we have 10-30-12, 11-6-12, 11-13-12, and we will add 11-13-12, the general election canvas minutes were added for our consideration.
Move approval.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. The approval of the minutes as submitted. In hearing no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. Okay. For the following as listed. Consideration of personnel action. All items, only two items are the only ones submitted.
Move approval.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. The approval of personnel action. Is there any further comments? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Personnel actions are approved. And then moving on down to consideration of claims.
Another good claims week. Yep. I'm worried about what's coming.
Oh, yeah.
But this is a good one. I move approval of claims.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. The approval of claims. Hearing no comment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Claims are approved. On the consent agenda, please add road closure number 1340 and two utility permits, 1334 and 1335.
Move approval of consent agenda.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. The approval of the consent agenda. Roll call. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Okay. Okay, item 8, there's no public hearing this time, and item 9, under additional items, is consideration of resolution 1332 to receive and review bids for the sale of bonds in the amount of $3,185,000 and authorize issuance of urban renewal tax increment revenue bond and certification of tax increment finance debt to Story County. We have Auditor Renee Auditor, you're not auditor. Treasurer Renee Tweed and Bob Johnston are bond counsel. I was going to say we haven't made that big leap yet, given you dual duties.
That's right. She had it for a while.
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
Is it on?
Is that on? Is the light on?
Now it's back
on.
I
know. Great. Okay.
I gave you a packet that included the letter that went out to six banks. Okay. I got one bid back, one nice decline, and I did not hear from the other banks. So we have one bid from State Bank and Trust. And Bob thought that was a nice bid.
Okay. Customarily, Bob and Renee, from the one that you got rejection and so forth, is that just a sign of the economy? Any, you know, thing that you could draw from your years of experience that would be worth noting?
I think the banks just have excess funds right now, and they're not, they don't need the investment.
Okay.
What we have
Mr. Chairperson and members of the board, this debt that you've offered them is a little bit unique. It is not backed by the full faith and credit of Story County. It is payable solely from the incremental revenue produced from this wind, whichever direction I'm pointing, the wind farm turbines. That makes it a different kind of debt creature. The number of banks are saying, no, we don't invest in anything except general obligation, full faith. Okay, fine. All right, we understand that. So I believe the bid you do have is an excellent bid, and there are a number of reasons. One, the interest rate itself is very, very much in the market for this type of debt, non-GO, pure TIF. Plus, they've agreed to allow you to prepay any amount of it at any time you wish. So that's something that I had said to Renee. Now, we may have to come back if banks really are resistant to lock this in for 10 years. We should know that because we can, you know, redo it again. But I think you have an excellent bid that gives you probably the most flexibility you could ever have gotten in borrowing this much money for this amount of time and leaving yourself with all kinds of options if you want them.
I had one question about what we're using to back this. As I understand it, it's everything we have in TIF. So the wind turbines and Vetter Construction and the two Showplace wind turbines. I mean, it's the whole TIF project.
Every taxable dollar of incremental value. Okay. Yes, sir, it certainly is. Here is a payment schedule. I don't know that this got handed out.
Thank you.
The total principal and interest payments for the life. I tried to structure it so that you'd come off each year with about the same amount. We're in the range of $350,000 a year in TIF revenue that will be needed to make these payments. And so from a planning standpoint, it doesn't fluctuate greatly. But yes, this is not... The way the system works, the bank has a lien, if you will, a mortgage, first lien, against the TIF revenue that comes in from the Story County Urban Renewal Area. You're going to discuss regularly and again later today your certification annually of how many of those dollars you really want to bring in, and you'll peg it to be close to this amount. And so there's quite a bit of revenue. Wayne had given me some new numbers that I put in this letter. Even in the current year, we're very close to having a possible $1 million in incremental revenue if you wanted it. And then, as you remember, it goes up above $1.8 million. Well, probably you're not going to even consider using all of that. But from a bank standpoint, I'm an investor in your debt. Wow, that's pretty good security to have a pledge of that much revenue.
I mean, sure, if you equate it to debt-to-equity ratio.
That's the point, or one point.
And the bank that bid knew and understood what we're doing and how the funds are going to be pulled. So
yeah, I would just, for the record, indicate that we're talking about the assessor, Wayne Schickeraff, I believe, so that since there's two Waynes for Story County.
Yes, not you, Wayne.
Yes, your esteemed county assessor, Mr. Schickeraff, yes. So it would be my recommendation, unless you have other questions, that you, one, approve this bid, and two, approve the resolution, which...
Are there other questions for Bob and Renee at this time, board?
No. Okay. Renee and Bob both, thank you very much for your work on this, and Jessica as well.
Okay. All right. Just in the spirit of full disclosure, is there normally this is not a topic that would require public comment, but hearing that this is the first time, if there is anyone that wanted to go on the record make a comment regarding this, we certainly would allow it at this time. Okay, seeing none, then we'll move on. So we have a motion and a second. Or we're waiting for it, I suppose.
I'll move approval of Resolution 1332 and move that we accept the bid from State Bank and Trust.
Second.
We have a motion to approve Resolution 1332 and to accept the bid from State Bank and Trust as submitted. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, roll call, Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Resolution 1332 is adopted and acceptance of the bid offer from State Bank and Trust. Thank you again, Renee and Bob, for your effort and work in this area. And a special thank you to Supervisor Sanders for your ongoing work on behalf of the board, working with both Renee and Assistant County Attorney Jessica and Bob through this process. So appreciate that very much. Okay. Moving on to item two, discussion and consideration of Story County Annual Urban Renewal Report. Stacy Herridge from the Auditor's Office.
I attached the annual report. Senate or House File 2460 is placing more requirements on the counties. So do you have any questions as far as what this report is?
This new this year?
This is new this year.
Okay.
It's based off of the 2010 valuation.
Right.
So we did not have our TIF set up for the 2010 valuation. We incurred some debt ending fiscal year 12, but we did not have any TIF revenue that came in. So they made a, what did they call it, a special Excel format for counties like us that did not have it fully set up. So that's what this is. Basically, I just need a simple motion so I can get this reported.
This is dealing with the $500,000 in debt that we issued to ourselves, is this report.
This is basically debt and revenue for TIF based on the 2010 valuation for fiscal year 11-12.
Okay.
And then this will be sent to the Department of Management along with our ordinance that we adopted in November of last year, along with the map and that information. So,
looks like a thorough report. How complex was it to fill out?
Lisa, Martin, and I, it took us maybe 10 minutes to fill it out. So it wasn't bad. Next year probably more because we'll have more TIF revenue and debt to report.
If this has to be filed every year.
Every year, right. So you'll see us next year around this time as well.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
So you said you need a motion to approve the... Okay.
Right.
I'll move that we approve the Story County Annual Urban Renewal Report for FY 2012.
Second.
Been moved and second. The approval of the Story County Annual Urban Renewal Report for 2012. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you, Stacy. Okay. Okay. Item three is consider resolution 1330 appropriation amendment. Assistant Auditor Lisa Markley.
How you doing?
Good morning. What you have in front of you, a couple weeks ago I was here with the quarterly financial report, and we talked about needing to appropriate some more dollars for some departments. So I went ahead and put together an appropriations amendment. This is, in most departments, 95% appropriation. There are a few that are higher than that for reasons that we've talked about in the past, whether it be general county betterment, countywide services, some conservation funds that are not county tax dollars. They are Friends of Conservation type funds. But in general, the majority of these are 95% appropriation. I did appropriate 100% of the general election costs because it appears as though we are going to need that. And the general election is done, so we're halfway through the year. Any questions?
None for me.
I'll move approval of Resolution 1330.
Second.
It's been moved and second the approval of Resolution 1330 for FY 13 appropriation amendment. Is there further discussion? Hearing none. Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Resolution 1330 is approved.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you. Item 4, discussion and consideration of awarding a contract for medical examiner's transport. Supervisor Toot?
Over about the last 18 months, I've been working with Dr. Jamie Whiter, who is our county medical examiner. He's been trying to make some changes in his office, and some of the changes were, I think, part of the billing process. Currently, most things that he bills for is billed through the McFarland Clinic, which he's associated with. And between their billing system and the way things work around here, sometimes it gets kind of cloudy. So one of the things he proposed was that instead of having an ambulance transport a deceased after a medical examiner's investigation, that he have local funeral homes do it. And that was working out pretty well. He was saving quite a bit of money. It's about half the cost of what an ambulance transport was. And I think he had just kind of had a gentleman's agreement with some local funeral homes and would kind of pass that around. And we decided it may be to everybody's advantage if we put out that process for bid. So between Lisa and Alyssa and I, we came up with a bid request. We sent that out to the local funeral homes here in Story County, and we received three bids back. The lowest bid was $400 of the three, and that was from Bacon Funeral Home and Crematory here in Nevada. So I've got all three bids, and I think you guys do. If you have any questions, I've had a conversation with the medical examiner, and he has no reservations about any of the funeral homes that bid. He said whoever would bid would be able to fulfill the contract as we've got it written up. So he was going to leave that up to us. So. If you guys don't have any questions, I would recommend that we...
I think it's just important to note that I had a couple just contact me directly, and I told them that if they had questions to give you a call. And basically they were just saying that they didn't have the people, person, manpower to actually perform the request that was there, and that was the reason that they didn't submit the bid. They certainly understood the value of what the medical examiner was requesting and so forth, but it was more... Unless that they just weren't in a position to provide that service. So, okay.
So I guess I would recommend that we accept the low bid from Bacon Funeral Home for the $400 for the transport.
Second.
It's been moved and second that we accept the low bid for the medical examiner's transport from Bacon Funeral Home here in Nevada. Is there further discussion? Okay, hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Paul, thanks for your work on
this. Thank you, Paul.
Justin, if you want to stick around after the chair signs the contract, if you're authorized to sign for Bacon, then...
I am, but we just...
Okay, all right. I'll get a hold of you and bring it out, and we can sign. That's all right.
Okay. All right. Next item 5 is consideration of Resolution 1332, the final subdivision plat of the Oak Subdivision locating on lands under the ownership of Hunsaker Christie Shirt Builders, Inc., located at Section 22 of Franklin Township at the southwest corner of West 190th Street and U.S. Highway 29. Charlie DeSalle from Planning and Development.
Well, after that great introduction, I want, real quick, as a matter of procedure, can we do the next item first, the development agreement, before we do the subdivision plat?
Well, if you tell me why.
What's that?
If you tell me a good reason why.
By our ordinance, we have to have the development agreement approved before we approve a final plat, so, yeah.
Okay,
it's just like a matter of procedure. So.
Sound like a good reason for me.
I didn't notice till this morning that they were reversed, so.
Okay, so you'd like for us to be discussing first item 6, which is the consideration of the improvement agreement between the entities as listed. Is that correct? Okay. And any other rationale other than this is a procedural matter that needs to take place?
That needs to be approved before the final plat's approved. So.
Okay.
You mind just taking us through it real quick? Just
yep. Pretty much the improvement agreement itself, what this does is it sets up an irrevocable letter of credit, more or less, where if the developer does not put the road in by the date that they listed here, which would be June 30th of next year, that the county can take that letter of credit out and use the money to put the road in ourselves. More or less, it's set up for in a case where if the development falls, if it goes under for whatever reason, the developer backs out at the last minute and we have lots out there and we don't have a road which we need, it just sets it up so we're financially secure and moving forward with it. So the security amount has been signed off by Darren at $150,000 or $150,000, excuse me. And Jessica's looked the agreement over and has also signed off on it as well. So if you have any questions to her, I know she's here.
Move approval of the improvement agreement between Story County and Hunsicker, Christy Shirk Builders.
Second.
And moved in second, the approval of the improvement agreement between Story County and Hunsicker, Christy Shirk Builders, Inc., for the Oak subdivision. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, now we move up.
Final plat.
Consideration of Resolution 1332, which is the final plat.
Yes. And as you'll recall, we did see the preliminary plat last week, so hopefully this is still fresh in your minds. The few conditions that were placed on the preliminary plat included a few things, such as the drainage easement, what has been included on the plat here, and it is, satisfies our regulations. The floodplain area has been shown around that stream. The public utility easements along Oak Crest Circle have been increased to 15 feet. The road, one quick change there, the road on the preliminary plat was shown to be Oak View Circle. We did realize that we already have an Oak View Circle up by Roland, so we did ask the developer to change the road name, and that is now Oak Crest Circle, so minor change on that. The right-of-way, as you know, typically we require along 190th Street there to have that 60 feet. We did use alternative compliance to approve a different amount. So lot B and C, which are along 190th Street, those lots will be dedicated to Story County, while Street Lot A, which is Oak Crest Circle, will be dedicated to public for public use. So Story County won't have ownership of that road and won't be responsible for any of the maintenance, and the maintenance of that road is set up through the covenants that will be recorded with the subdivision, and the homeowners association will be responsible for maintenance of that road. There is a public access easement that will connect Oak Crest Circle with Ada Hayden Park just to the south there. I did have a brief conversation with the City of Ames on that, and they're definitely in favor of that and like that connection's being made, and I think that we would echo those comments. So with that, I think pretty much everything else remains the same. It's just a final plat, and once this is approved, if this is approved, the process for this subdivision will be over.
Any other comments or from the general public regarding this process?
We haven't had any, so.
I'll move approval of Resolution 1322.
Second.
Been moved and second the approval of Resolution 1322. Is there further discussion, comments?
Means that Chuck's not going to come back every week? Chuck, we're going to miss you. Oh, okay. All right.
Okay.
Good.
So with that, roll call, Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Resolution 1332 is adopted, and Chuck, you're welcome to come back anytime. Yes. Absolutely. Please feel free. Now we may have to go back and re-vote then.
No, just real quickly, I want to thank Charlie and Leanne have worked really hard on this process. I hope someday we can revisit how we work between Ames and Gilbert and Story County, but Charlie and Leanne really did a great job and have just been awesome for us to work with. So I just wanted to commend them on their role in this process, which has been outstanding.
Thank you,
Chuck.
Thank you for the comments. Appreciate it. Okay. All righty. Okay. No agency reports. Departmental reports. Information technology will report on the 4th of December. So now we move on to Conservation Director Mike Cox.
Morning.
Gentlemen.
Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Let's see. Well, I know you guys are pretty up to date with a lot of things we're working on, but I won't spend a lot of time on the things that you're already aware of. But just quickly, some of the things that additional things that we've been working on during the last quarter. And I'm not going to talk about very much about IRVM. Mr. Quaker was here a couple weeks ago, and so I know you heard directly from him. So, first off, as far as field operations, you know, last few months, it's kind of ironic. You know, normally we really want to be able to get out in the field and do some burning. And, you know, during the burn ban, we weren't able to do that, of course. And you know what? That was a mixed blessing. That was fine because we had so much other work to do, and it really allowed us to get some other things done. And so speaking of that, we really put a concerted effort this year on seed harvest. We got an estimated 300 pounds of live seed harvested, 3,500 pounds of bulk seed harvested. So that was very good. Can help us move forward as we get to, you know, soon having discussions for next year's budget. That seed now can help us move forward with the needs that IRVM will have in roadside program, as well as the needs that we have coming at Dakin's. So the seed harvest was really important for us this year, and we did put a substantial amount of time into seed harvest. other than that, you know, our natural resource projects, you're familiar with our project at Robison with the goats. We had another successful this year with goats at Robison, and we had volunteer groups from ISU that were our goat herders, and that went really well. So we just completed, last week, some more burns. Now that the burn ban, of course, is lifted, we are able to get some burns done, and we did that at Robison. And we've done a burn at McFarland Park as well. Continue on brush removal on several different areas. Robison One, Jeanette is another one. You're probably familiar with the Jeanette project, and we've worked since day one with that project hand in hand with Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. We continue that partnership with them, and they donated some time from the Conservation Corps of Iowa to us this year to work at Jeanette. So we've been busy there doing, again, mostly brush removal. You've heard me say several times invasive species removal, honeysuckle removal, autumn olive, etc., multiflora rose. So we've got quite a bit done there. We also got a grant. I think you may recall we received a grant from Living Roadway Trust Fund to have, again, the Conservation Corps of Iowa work at the prairie overview area on I-35. Project that we haven't really touched. We have a management agreement to maintain that area, at least the natural resources of that area, and we haven't really done very much there the last several years. So,
Where the new rest stop is? That's
a lot of people think it's the rest stop,
but it's not there.
But it isn't.
Okay, but it's near there though.
It's just north of the southbound rest stop.
Yep.
Okay.
It was built
right.
To overlook the reservoir.
Overlook the reservoir.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. Correct.
Right. Okay.
Correct.
Good. Okay.
So there is some remnant, you know, net remnant prairie on there. And so we're trying to get in there and do some tree removal. Ironically, originally the permit with DOT said we could not touch any living trees. And that was interesting. So had some discussion with them. It kind of defeats the purpose of managing that for prairie if we can't do anything with the trees. So we've overcome that. But at any rate, we had CCI crew out here for 2 days a few weeks ago to work at that area, and then we've got them out again next week to work at that area as well. So we're getting some good things done there. Also with our natural resource program, we just instituted an internship program. So we've got a college-level internship program going with, we call it a land stewardship intern, and they'll work with our natural resource specialist on these kinds of projects. And that will start the spring semester and no expense to the county. So that's a nice addition that we have as well. One of the things that we did since we couldn't burn also is next segment of the Touch a Life Trail. I think probably most of you are familiar with that. I know Wayne is. Paved trail around McFarland Park. Been working at that for several years in conjunction with Town and Country Club, Kiwanis Club. And so they bring members of the club out and help us pave it. And we got about 1,400 feet paved this year. We've probably got about that much to do again to complete the whole loop around the lake. So that's moving forward nicely. It's nice to get that done. And I guess lastly, as far as our field two more things as far as field operations go. One, we've been doing really well with volunteers this last lately. And we just had our last team day, or it's our trails work day for the season. We had it at at West Peterson Park. We reclaimed or rebrushed out a trail that we used to have that hadn't received very much attention in the last several years. It's a trail on a easement that we have. It's not on our property. But we do, like I said, have a trail easement for it. We were able to brush that out. We probably had 30 volunteers, give or take 30 volunteers that came out and helped with that, mostly university students that helped with that. So really nice to get that done. I talked about our seed harvest already. One of the things we do in addition to the combine seed harvest is hand harvested seed. We do that at Doolittle, and every year we have some days set aside and recruit volunteers to help us. We had about 30 volunteers for that as well, and that went really well. So, and then lastly, as far as our field operations go, you may remember we've been working on a fence project on the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail the last couple years. We call it the Griffith Mile that we had to fence, and some of it was just really rough terrain, extremely rough terrain. And we just completed the last section of that project a couple weeks ago, so can check that one off. That's good to go. So adjoining landowners can get cattle out, and that's what really we're doing that fence project for. And we've had several. You'll hear us talk a little bit more about this as time comes by too. But we routinely have fencing projects, and they seem to almost be increasing. of course, we're responsible for any abandoned railroad right-of-way. Iowa fence law says we are responsible for both sides. There's no right-hand, left-hand rule. We're responsible for all of it. And so anywhere where there's a need for fence from the adjoining landowners, that's our responsibility to address that. So this was one of many that we just completed. As far as the programs and events, you're familiar with our EE programs going full swing now with classes back, has been in schedule or in session now, and so they're staying really busy. We had our annual Halloween hike. We had about just shy of 240 participants for that and 70 volunteers for that. So an impressive number of volunteers, and it was nice to have a good turnout from the public there. Our Fall Partners Festival didn't have as good a turnout for that. Normally, we hope to get about 400 people. The day before it was a really cold, blustery day, and the day of the festival was a little bit better, but still was a bit chilly for that time of year. So we probably only had about 250 people there, but those that were there sure had a good time. So that was well received. A couple other just events that we had. We did the fall fishing tournament at Hickory Grove. We had just shy of 20 teams entered in that. So that went really well. And for the first time, we did a bird trial, a bird dog trial that we co-sponsored with Pheasants Forever. They had about 30 dogs entered in that, and so that was, again, really well received. We'll learn as we move forward with doing this event in the future, but of those 30 dogs, probably only a handful put birds up. Because the weather conditions, it was really dry and windy, so the scenting conditions weren't great, and it was real tall prairie that we put the birds in. So that was interesting. We'll learn from that as we move forward next year. But hey, everyone that came out enjoyed it. People came from Missouri, and I think there are people there from Nebraska. So they came from quite a ways away, in addition to, you know, of course, people from here,
cool,
Central Iowa. But again, that was partnership with Pheasants Forever. And the other partnership that we did with Pheasants Forever was a youth hunt. We'll continue this again, most likely next year, continue both of those. Great events. We did a safety half a day training and activity with the youth before they went into the field. So that was nice to do. Nice partnership with our local PF chapter. And also a big event that we had in October was Operation Relief. You may have heard about this also. This was a project that we did with Iowa DNR and Alliant Energy to essentially sell trees to Alliant customers. Trees sold for $25 a piece, and so it was subsidized by Alliant, of course. We put out just shy of 400 trees that we sold. We planned on selling 400, and I think we sold 396, so that went really well. And we did receive $4,000 to manage that project. So, and then, of course, they paid all the project. As far as administration, you're familiar with the Dakins Project. We've had those discussions here. I received a revised bid set last night, and the Conservation Board tonight will consider recommending moving forward with our bids. And then I'll come back to this body December 4th. So is that 2 weeks? 2 weeks.
Mike, I just wanted to hear, I'm getting questions from our action, I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, where this board said, no, 2-7, that's it, you know, the money that's there. And I think that was taken by some people in the public as, oh, we've done away with the Dakins Lake project. I don't know if you're getting any of those comments. I don't know if you are. I've gotten a few. So I just want to make sure we're really, really clear. No, we haven't done away with anything. We just said this is the limit that the Board of Supervisors is going to approve funding.
Correct. Correct. And I've received some of those comments as well.
Yeah.
You know, quite contrary to that, we're moving forward. It's an exciting project. I think all involved are excited about it, and we've got funding necessary to get it done. So, other than that, I think you're also familiar with the land acquisition and sales that we're working on, two at Dakins and one wetland reserve program. Those are still moving forward through processes. We're getting those finalized.
But we've done what we needed to do as far as a board.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. The only thing we're waiting on two of them, I think I explained last week, was final award or final approval from National Park Service to convert some stipulations from one parcel to the other parcel. Hickory Grove Watershed, I want to talk about just about a little. You're probably familiar, we've been working on this watershed project for years now, I think. We are nearing the completion of this last phase that we're in. And ISU had a planning grant to develop a assessment and implementation plan for cleaning up the lake, the watershed. That is nearly complete. The assessment is done, and the implementation plan is almost done. We have the watershed coordinator hired through that grant, and that grant terminates the end of this calendar year, so we don't have a coordinator after after December. So that'll be something that we continue to have a need for some of those responsibilities. So we will, Story County, NRCS, ISU, DNR, et cetera, that is the team on this watershed assessment and watershed project, we will work cooperatively to see, you know, how we can meet some of those needs. It's proven really important to have someone that can go to landowners, meet with them individually, and I think that isn't always as received as well if it is someone from the county. So we'll see if we can get someone to fill some of those roles that isn't necessarily from Story County.
Mike, have we ever gotten close to any determination of what percentage of the water quality issues at Hickory Grove are based on runoff and what percentage are based on the geese, which I think are the two major sources of any impact? Do we have any feel for that?
Good question. Okay. And that's next.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean
to jump
ahead.
Okay. You know, the lake was listed as an impaired body, which is a formal designation. It was impaired not for sedimentation, but impaired for bacteria. So we know we have sedimentation and erosion problems. We know we have to address those. In fact, the sediment retention capacity on the East Bay is either at or just shy of its capacity. I.e., that East Bay was designed with about a 14-foot maximum depth. Now it's 4 feet, 4.5 feet maximum depth. That retention, the sediment retention capacity in that east part of the lake, so east of 680th, is full, arguably full. And so now it's, you know, sediment's going to keep pushing more under the road through the culverts and into the main body. We know we have to address sedimentation. Number two is bacteria. We know we have bacterial sources or bacteria coming from three sources: geese, septic, and livestock. So those are the three things that we need to address. Now, we will look for funding, implementation funding, probably some federal and state money available to address all of those, hopefully sedimentation, and we feel a little more confident about some funding to address some of the bacterial problems. So we know geese are a problem. We know that problem is concentrated at the beach. That's where it's worst. So, you know, we'll be looking at ways that we can keep the geese off the beach.
Is it time for a goose dog?
Well, we've looked at that. And
it might as well look at the dog.
Yeah. I tell you what, that pays. We did get a quote from someone that does that, and to the tune of $70,000 a year, to hire someone to come in with a dog. See, you know, geese they're smart animals, and you know, they'll leave when the dog's there, then they're going to come back. So, you know, how do you keep them away? And they learn from things. If you do hazing, you know, do some bangers or some fireworks type hazing, they're going to learn that's not going to hurt them after a while, and so it's not going to be effective. So you have to just continue to rotate your hazing methods and keep them away.
Has anyone done anything like that that's been successful that you're aware of?
Well, a good share of the success that we're learning about, Big Creek has used dogs.
And if the dogs are on site, they're successful. It's the
correct
problem of coming and going, and if there's a schedule, that the geese are sharp enough to learn.
And I think that, you know, that's reflective of how much you pay is how often you have the dogs come to the site. You know, they're not going to spend all day every day there. but I think Big Creek pays $20,000 a year for their dog service. But at any rate, dogs have been successful. A combination of hazing methods have been marginally successful. Fences have been have seen some success. Big Creek has used fences. I think Clear Lake has used fences, and we've started using some fences as well. So we'll be looking at those things that we can do. We know we've got work on it. Once we get more successful with getting the geese off the beach, we need to address the beach itself and clean up some of that sediment. That E. coli lives in the sediment of the beach underwater. And, of course, the shallower water, the higher the concentration of E. coli. So ankle depth is the highest concentration. Ankle depth and less is the highest concentration. And that's what's continually churned when people are using the beach. So we know we need to address that. You may hear us talk about, a few years down the road, a drawdown on the lake. To address some of these sedimentation problems, to address a fisheries problem that we have with carp, and at the same time to address some of these beach issues. So something to keep in the back of your mind that we'll be discussing as we move forward with how we address this. But to answer your question, yes, it's bacteria, and it's those three sources. We will look at the watershed group. We'll look at grant funding to provide cost share for exclusion for the livestock, i.e. building a pond and maybe doing some bank stabilization, et cetera, in cooperation with that landowner, because he needs a water source for the cattle that are in that stream bank. And septic, that we know we'll be looking for some cost share funding to help address some unpermitted septic systems within the watershed. There are 8 of them in the watershed. And so some of them lie fairly close to tiles. And so we'll have to target those septic systems and which ones we think, if we can find some funding for, that we can do a cost share to get them replaced. So we know we have those issues with the watershed. And I've probably gone on more than you need to want to know there. But lastly, I mentioned our volunteer program, and I said we had have had a real successful last few months with our volunteer program. We ran some numbers, did some tallying on our volunteers, and just in October alone, we had 1,400 hours donated by volunteers. Our normal, Wayne, you may be probably familiar with this, our normal annual volunteer level is about twice that. So we did really well in October with volunteers. So, and that's I'm pretty confident that.
So Mike, I think a lot of that is a tribute to you and your staff and your visioning and the outreach. You guys have done a remarkable job in working with partners and other groups. Regarding the direction that you'd like to see conservation be in this county, and I think it is paying off because there's a lot of people that are stepping up to the plate and willing to volunteer because they see the commitment that you guys and the county has made towards quality of life issues as it relates to conservation. So I really think you and your staff has a lot to do with that level of interest. So
thank you.
Nice job. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Paul?
I just visited with the Colonesco School District last night. Stacy Herridge from our auditor's office went up with me, and we gave a presentation and answered questions on TIF. I think it was really, really well received. It absolutely was an informative exchange, give and take, and I feel really confident that they come out with a better understanding of how TIF impacts them or the lack thereof in terms of the school district, but just laid it out for them and told them I'd be glad to go back anytime.
Briefly, last Friday, I met with in Marshalltown with Deb Shilroth and I. We met with representatives from six other counties talking about the regionalization concept. Deb will plan to meet individually with each of you in the next few weeks to kind of update you as to that meeting and some of the things that we took away from the meeting. Overall, I thought it was an example of outstanding collaboration on the part of each of the CPCs and the counties that were there. We discussed, the history of why we're there, looking at the legislation, looking at the timetable. They put together a timetable for work and collaboration. Each of the members are going to go back and meet with their various boards of supervisors to update them in the upcoming weeks. And hopefully there will be a formal discussion at some point here after the first of the year regarding whether or not we want to move forward with the realignment of those entities or make ourselves open to receiving others as well. Discussions did enter with the future or the prospects of Polk County. No doors were closed, but there was considerable discussion regarding the benefit and the shared goals that the six counties along with Story County has in common, and felt that that would be a good fit. So you'll hear a very positive, I think, report from Deb. And while there was no commitments made at that time, I felt it was a meeting that really helped move the needle forward with us feeling very good about the cooperation of the counties around. And then yesterday I met with Ern Rewitz from County Community Service. We met with the HRDA Executive Director and Brooke Ramsey, her administrative assistant, and the topic really was we met with about 12 other providers and case managers, and we just talked about where the transportation situation is at this present time, some of the challenges that we faced in the transition, and came out with some workable goals and solutions, some strategies of communication and with the providers that will assist us in communicating to their clients. And I felt this was a very good meeting and exchange of how we could address some of the challenges that obviously has been made at this time. And I think everybody came away from that meeting feeling very good and were willing to work together for the benefit of the clients that they serve. And we recognize that some of the clients that were served because of their particular disability or challenge that they face, some of the changes that have taken place has been very difficult for them to be able to address, and we're trying to smooth that process out by having other people help communicate that, particularly the caseworkers, when there is an issue, so that it just doesn't come right back to us without having some way to kind of mitigate the frustration that is existing. So I thought it was a very positive exchange. Okay, so then moving on to item number one under other reports. This is a discussion of the Board of Supervisors to-do list. Supervisor Sanders, and I believe Leanne Harder from Planning and Development, I thank you, have been working along with this, or just
she has. I mean, she's helped build the list, as has Shelley, and maintain it. I don't know that we need a whole lot of discussion on this. I just want, as we start the budgeting process, I wanted to make sure we had this in front of us. And I'll just remind you guys that when we started 2012, all we had on our list were Board of Supervisor items. So go to the top, two-thirds of the top page. That's all we had, and there's been some additions even to that list during the course of the year. The rest of the items come from the Government Restructuring Committee and CPAT, and a huge majority of these we're going to address as part of our budgeting process. But I thought it was important that we all and the public had access to this list as it exists, and that we are diligent about going through these items as we talk about the budgeting process. So wasn't looking for a whole lot of discussion here today. I'm sure willing to talk about it if you guys want to, but I just wanted to get it in front of us.
Well, again, I think it kind of goes back to something we had mentioned previously when we were talking about the CPAT, the whole idea of long-range planning. This is another example of it. You've got to have a list of the items that will need to be addressed, and as you indicated earlier, as we go through the budget, some of these, in order to become into fruition, there will have to be some discussion about budget implications, whether some can be done within this next calendar year or the following one, but I think it's all part of the plan. And I want to appreciate you taking the time to kind of put this list together. And I do think that particularly some of these areas that involve some of the other departments that are will be an opportunity for us to really engage them in the process. And some of them, obviously, during the budgeting process, we're going to have to come up and prioritize exactly where we want to spend some of those dollars.
Yeah. I think you're 100% right. I look at this list and I say there's three actions possible. We can either move ahead with these items, go ahead and work on them. We can decline to move ahead, say, no, this is not for us for whatever reason. Or we can say, yeah, that's something we want to do, but not now for whatever reason. What is not reasonable to me is for us to not at least address them and make one of those decisions. And this is going to be a never-ending list. I mean, for every item that we are able to fill in and say, okay, that's done, we're going to add another one. There's going to be things coming from other places. There's going to be items that we take action on here that are going to trigger a few other action points. And all this is intended to do is, so many times for me, we get so caught up in the day-to-day business that we have to do. We know our cycle. You know, we're going to budget and the cycle of being a supervisor. But there's also these items that can very easily fall through the cracks that we talk about one time and then we just, for whatever reason, don't get back to. And I don't think it's any of the three of us' intention that we ever do that. And so that's where I think a list like this can be helpful, just trying to figure out where we are on this. So.
All right. So I will hope that you will, again, keep reminding us, and as we start through the budgeting process as well, and we can use this as a checklist as we identify some of those as we go through that process. So appreciate that very much. Okay. Anything else regarding this at this time, Paul? Okay. Moving on then to public comment number two. This is items not on the agenda. The board may not take any action at this time. May do so in the future. Yes, Loris.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm sorry because I didn't intend. I just came to listen. A comment was made during the liaison reports that I'd like to address, and that was that Deb Shildroth will be meeting with both Rick and Paul separately to update about the conversation with the six counties. I would think that it would be appropriate for maybe Deb to come and update the whole board.
Will be, but first of all, the meeting with each of them is to give them some background information prior to that, and then a report will be made to the full board.
Why would the public not be open to that, Wayne?
Just simply because that's the process that we're going to use, because I believe you were one that have asked us to not have all three of us together, and we chose to not all three of us go to that meeting. I was the only one that went to that meeting.
Right.
So the next step then would be for her to inform them about some of the processes that took place, and then a report will be brought to the full meeting in which she will lay that out for the public. So the public will be involved in the discussion, but prior to that, there will be an opportunity for her to talk to each of them, and that was at my direction.
Now, let me ask you this. As a, the ex, I'm going to put my journalist hat on here, okay? If the Tribune calls, or if I had called and I were still a practicing journalism, called and asked to interview Deb, you know, just call her directly and said, like to know what happened at the meeting, usually that kind of interview would include then, well, can you give me some background, et cetera, okay? Would that be prohibited, or is each individual citizen or each individual media outlet not going to be privy to the background information?
Each individual, I would sure that Deb would be willing to share any information if someone requested it. That is just the normally way that she would operate. And so, yes, I don't see that as going to be an issue. And the process, again, is to avoid the perception that the three of us are meeting outside of the public scrutiny when we have those meetings. And so this was just an attempt, again, to make sure that the spirit and intent of the open meetings law is not being abused.
Okay. Boy, you know how I appreciate that. It just seems to me then if 10 of us in the public want to know the background, we're going to have to set 10 appointments with Deb. I don't know that that's an effective use of her time.
Okay. She's got to brief them about her the meeting, and then she will come before the board, and then we will have a full presentation at that point in time.
What will the supervisors hear? What do you expect the supervisors to hear that the public can't hear?
I'm not expecting them to hear anything that the public can't hear.
Okay.
It just depends on the questions that might be asked.
Right. Okay. I've heard your position. I appreciate the time to thought for this discussion. I hope maybe the other two supervisors could think about what I said and why I'm asking.
Yeah. And Loris, before you go, I'd like to just ask you, because I'm really interested in meeting with Deb, because I have questions about where we're headed. I mean, we have Polk that's interested in joining with us, and we have these other six that are interested in joining with us. And I would think that your expectation as a journalist and in other ways would be that we as supervisors gather as much information as we can when we're going through the process to make that. Now, that does not preclude public information. It does not preclude Deb making a report. But if you think all the information that I ever get about anything is when I'm sitting here, you'd be mistaken. I do a lot of reading. I do a lot of asking of questions. And where we draw the line of what's appropriate and inappropriate is if you get more than one of us together and we start to do any deliberation, anything along those lines, that's where it becomes inappropriate. So this seems to me, and I didn't know this was where we were headed, but I know that before, if I saw that Deb was on our agenda to come to report to us about one of these meetings, first thing I'm going to do is pick up the phone and call Deb and say, all right, take me through, brief me. I don't want to be surprised when I'm sitting here, ever. Paul, I think you handle things the same way.
Right.
And so I think Wayne was just giving information about kind of how we operate back in the back. But I would think your expectation of me would be along those lines, that I'm going to study and find as much information as I can.
It is. It's probably back to, first of all, that I think I prefer, you know, that as much business as possible be conducted all the way through in front of the public. And part of it has to do with the unique position that there are three full-time supervisors, as opposed to if you guys served on a school board or you served on a city council or a regular board and commission, your staff would be doing that. There would be a report that would be available before you met as a body in deliberation. And that's where I see you're taking this step here. You're avoiding that official report that a staff member would write in advance that you'd be reading at the same time. And then you might fire off emails or pick up the phone and call. But a lot of times those questions come up or are reiterated then during the actual meeting where the public's available. It has to do with how much doesn't get out to the public, because as you guys are focused on your administrative functions, and where does it overlap with deliberative? So,
your point is well taken, and I think we are really diligent about making sure that every question, I mean, there's lots of questions that I know the answer to that I go ahead and ask here because that's what I view as necessary. But my question to you, you covered a lot of Ames City Council through the years. You don't believe that Steve Shanker has individual conversations with the council members on what could be hot topics before they walk into the...
Oh, he had lots of them. The difference was there was a staff report. But I appreciate the time the board has given to this, to my concern.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, moving on, I believe.
Your announcements?
Announcements from the supervisors.
Pass.
Just next week, Iowa Association of Counties will be up and running. I believe the supervisors may be aware now that I mentioned earlier last week that Mike Wenzine, our lobbyist, has announced that he is stepping down. There has been communication back and forth among the supervisors' exec board. We will be meeting with Mike next week prior to the official meeting as an exit interview working with the Bill Peterson and Linda Hinton regarding what we expect out of the lobbyists, and we're reaching out to former supervisors and others regarding a list of people that we might want to interview to serve as lobbyists for this upcoming session. So,
I would recommend Bill Lusher be on that list.
Bill is going to be on that list. I talked to him personally last night. He did have an interest, and so I will be forwarding that information to the exec board.
Super.
Good. Yep.
Move adjournment.
It's been moved and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you. And.